Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
This is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison, and today we have pop-up studio author Misty Patterson with us. Thank you, Misty, for joining us here today on Recess Duty. How are you doing?
I am fantastic because I get to be here with you doing something so fun with amazing listeners. So I'm just super, super grateful and honored and humbled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much. We actually connected through our Facebook group, PYP Coordinators, and I came and saw your little presentation, and then I led a little side discussion, and I thought you were such a really invigorating and very cool presenter. I was like, let's see if she wants to come on. And so luckily you were available. So thank you so much for coming and joining us on Recess Duty. So Misty, can you tell our listeners, for those who may not know you or of your work, who are you and what are you doing lately?
Yeah, I love the lately because there's just always so many like cool things.
For sure.
So I am an educator through and through. I come from a family of teachers, and I am a practicing teacher as well. I'm on an ed leave this year because I started my PhD in art education, and I get to do that alongside wonderful other project works, like being a new teacher mentor in my school district. I'm in West Vancouver in British Columbia, Canada. And I also get to work a coach or a consultant, depending on what word you like best, with educators, like all over the world. And we just do really wonderful things that help to pop up learning. So that's a little bit about me.
And I love what you just said right there of pop-up learning. And we'll get to your book in a minute, Pop-Up Studio. But I really do think like we have to be cognitive of those moments of when learning happens. It doesn't just happen in a classroom. Those moments pop up anywhere. And we really need to make sure that we're being mindful of it. And I love, when I saw your book, I was like, that is such a clever title. Like, it's very exciting. And I'm very happy to say that here at Chadwick, we are actually getting several copies of your book to share your wonderful work with the rest of the community. So I'm so excited to get to do that. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And I can't wait to share with you of all the stuff we do here.
I can't wait to hear all about it. And thank you for supporting the work, because I really believe that we're better together. And all of these ideas happen in conversation. They're all about relationships. So I can't wait to learn with you.
Agreed. And that is something I think we really connected with in our little presentation way back when was one, you're like, we are better together. And we should all be learning together. Like this idea that I'm the expert, I really don't like that word, to be honest. Like, I feel like we all bring something to the table and we're all knowledgeable in certain areas. And when we all come together to make something beautiful, I think that's when magic really truly happens, is when we are supporting everybody's learning at the table. And I think that's something that you and I really agree with.
Yeah, 100%. And I'd love to play off of that word expert, if that's okay, because it's something that you just said that described my intention. And I totally hear what you're saying, Levi. Like, as somebody who has major imposter syndrome, I shy away from that word expert as well. But yet I love the word expertise. And so when I think about juxtaposing those two words, of course, expert being an expertise, I think why we sometimes don't like the word expert is because of the power hierarchy that is embedded in that word. And so maybe we have images of like, you know, the teacher, the scholar or whatever, the person of power in front or on top, and, you know, everybody else is below. It's like a sort of triangle shape. Mm-hmm. And instead we're kind of going for more like circular sort of shapes and conversations, because that's how we've always learned throughout history. But expertise is something that I think we're striving for, at least I'm striving for.
Yeah.
When it comes to conceptual understanding, when it comes to your craft, regardless of what that is, if there's not expertise, that you can't be like a real artist in your field. So I think there's a humbleness, but also a striving to really deeply understand what you're doing and the world around us.
Missy, thank you so much for really putting that into perspective, because you are right. Like, we all do have expertise in a field or a passion or something that we want to share. But I do think there is a difference, agreed, that, like, I don't think anybody wants to be at the front of the stage and being like, I'm the expert. I'm the only one that knows this. I know everything. Listen to me. And there might be, but I certainly am not one of those. And I know we have a lot of colleagues and friends who are also not like that and wants to make sure that we're all here together. Cause I do think when you support everybody and you uplift everybody, you know, I just started reading this new book, and maybe you've heard about, being called a Multiplier by Liz Wiseman.
Oh, I have to put that on my wish list.
It's amazing. And she has a new version for education. And it's about what it means to be a multiplier of intelligence and multiplying culture, not only giving people to give 100%, but how do you empower them to give 120%? How do you have them feel like they are a part of the community and culture, and that they're valued and validated enough to grow? And it's such a powerful book. I highly recommend it. And I think that's what we're hinting on about what it is about being an expert versus being an expertise, of having expertise. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really exciting. So Missy, you started your PhD lately, roughly, right? How's that going?
It's super good. I feel really, really grateful to be in a graduate program. To do a PhD is competitive. The program that I'm in is an arts ed at Simon Fraser University here in the Lower Mainland in British Columbia. And they only accept 8 people every 2 years. So,
wow, congratulations.
Really, really lucky. And I look around at the people I get to learn with and from on a weekly basis, and I'm literally like pinching myself. It's just incredible. And the experience of it is both one of familiarity as I'm reading and I'm listening to people, I'm engaging in the work of, like, I feel like at home, like, yes, you're speaking my language. And then there's also so much stretch and explore happening of, whoa, like, this is a completely new idea, or I don't understand this, or my first course was all around Indigenous ways of knowing and being in the aesthetic realm. And I just have so much to learn in that area because I'm a settler on stolen lands. So to start to understand my place and my privilege is a very deep and challenging journey. So there's just a lot in this program, and I just feel like I'm growing like exponentially all the time, and I'm grateful for like conversations like this to be able to offer that time to kind of reflect and like, how is it going, and check in, and also to share and to dialogue, because we need it's like the breathing in, breathing out in the classroom, like. You can only take so much in before you need to like let it out and like walk it out,
yes,
and then breathe in more and kind of let it out. So I'm grateful that it's once a week and that it's going to be over the next at least 4 years.
That's amazing. Congratulations. And I know now that we're all connected, it's just going to be amazing to watch your journey and to see all the amazing things you do. And that was a beautiful analogy. And I've never heard of, you know, you can only take so much in before you have to let it out. And I think that as educators, we are so privileged to be able to connect with one another and to share. And I have never met an educator who is not willing to share, to have a dialogue, to have a conversation, to have a back and forth of, can you explain this a little bit better? Not better, but a little bit more. Can you explain this again? Can you show me an example? And it's one of the great things I love about our field is, people are so, especially within our Twitter community, is so together. Like, we're all here. You know, we have colleagues from around the world who I never met and have never worked with, but who are so willing to help support my kids and my growth that, like what you said, you can only take out and take in so much before you have to breathe out. And it's what a great community to be able to breathe out with so many others to share?
Oh my gosh, it's so amazing. You know, like if you follow me on Instagram specifically, you will see like I am a total work in progress, and it's very visible on that account specifically because Instagram is so visual. Mm-hmm. I mean, Twitter can be too, but it's different because you've got this linear feed, right?
Yep.
Whereas Instagram, you see this, you know, whole grid and stuff. The aesthetic is different. And I keep playing with like the bio copy, and I keep, you know, because I'm constantly growing and changing and seeing how the work that we do is living and breathing in different ways. And when things are like organic and you're playing at the intersections, there's always evolution. And so, how do we represent that in a way for others to kind of come into it and experience it and learn and grow and share and, you know, do all those kinds of things. So it's really cool to have these tools now to communicate and reflect and learn together that we didn't have before, you know, before
for
the,
sure.
the digital era. So it's really cool. Yeah,
and,
it's really cool.
And something that you said, you know, about having these tools that we didn't have before. I mean, mm-hmm. I think of the power that social media has had in not only in our everyday life, but in my professional career as in the last 8-9 years. And it has just been such an amazing learning platform and about, mm-hmm. about just putting stuff out there and seeing what resonates with people and seeing like you and I, we're like 14 hours apart. But because of Twitter or Facebook, we were able to connect. And I just think, you know, for those out there who are a little bit skeptical of joining it, because, you know, I think sometimes social media gets a bad negative rap because of the way it is used. Again, the tool itself is not bad. How we use it is impacting this positive or negatives, right? And I just think it's an amazing tool that we have that we should use. I think we should use on a more regular basis in our classrooms, in our schools, to share in the wider community. One of the things I love a lot is that this international school in China, and they actually have a hashtag that any of the teachers are able to use. And then as an accrediting officer, I was able to go in and see on Twitter, on Instagram, this hashtag that just documented all the learning K through 12 that they've been going through and the growth. And I was just like, what an amazing way to share their learning in a constructive way to show A, digital citizenship, B, what it means to be a positive digital citizen, and responsible use of technology.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to agree with everything that you just said, and I'm connecting to a school locally that I know was doing, I don't know if they're still doing that, but they were doing that for a while. And one of the things that I'm interested in is curation. You know, and yes. So like a hashtag is like this curating tool, right? Where you're just bringing everything together under a certain umbrella and then being able to, again, play with the connections, the relationships that are popping up within whatever you're curating. And that can be really exciting. You can start to notice themes. You might go like, oh, I love that particular idea. Like, oh, and that person's done that. So you've got now a window into their community, and you can go in and visit and learn from them, and just like, but really the sky's the limit. But I want to also pick up on what you were saying about how we use the tools. And one of the things I've kind of been paying attention in my own journey, and I was just reflecting on this week, I can, you know, really kind of get in the visionary stage. And I love that stage. I was just talking to somebody who told me that Walt Disney, and I don't know if this is true, but I love it if it is, that Walt Disney organized his building, like for his office building, with three floors. It had the visionaries on the top floor, the management in the middle, I guess like middle management, so literally and figuratively. And then, you know, people who were fulfilling detailed tasks. So maybe like bookkeeper, as an example, on the bottom floor. And apparently, according to the person I was talking to, one of Disney's secrets was to not mix the floors. And I thought that was really interesting. And I said, well, why? And they said, well, because if you've got like people who are tasking it out, super detailed focus, they're going to run into all these issues, right? Like, oh, this doesn't work. You can't do it like this. Like, if you've got that going on in the visionary floor, you've got cramping of the vision. And so what I realized very quickly was like, okay, yeah, that's cool. not a certificate, and if you're a teacher or an entrepreneur or, you know, somebody who's working really by, not by themselves, but you're having to figure it all out on your own, like a classroom teacher, you have to go to all the floors.
Yeah.
And that's hard. And so for myself, I can, I like, if I just, in some ways, would love to just live on the top floor and be like visioning creative, like, oh, sky's the limit, you know, like, you know, but then you need to like action it out, right? You've got to like figure out how you're going to manage it and everything. And then you've got to actually do it at the bottom level. And when I'm at the bottom level, when I'm at the ground floor, I can easily get on the butt train. It's like, this was a good idea, but, and I'm like stacking up the butt cars, you know? Yep. And then before you know it, my train has stopped and I'm totally forgetting what the vision was. Like, what is even the destination here? You know? And so I think that can happen sometimes with social media when you're wanting to post something, or, and especially because we all know that it's like, there's a permanent element to what's happening. And those of us who teach this digital literacy, at least like for me, I do, it's like burned into my mind that whatever you put online, it's like always going to be there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Forever. So how do we get this playful spirit when it comes to being on social media as a producer and not just a consumer? And so I think like two things help. I think like an umbrella of being a researcher and having a researcher's mindset can, is helping me out anyway. I don't know if it would help others, but it certainly helps me if I'm like, well, let's just see if I change this bio copy. Let's just see if I play with this new aesthetic layout, or let's just see what happens when I tweet this out, what the response is going to be back. And, you know, just learning from them and going, you know, anything that we do is research. Our life is research. And that's the spirit that I bring to Pop-Up Studio as well, that, you know.
And it's very apparent. Yeah, absolutely. And it's very apparent that you bring that in vigorous excitement of, let's try this and see. Let's do this and let's see. And one of the things I loved when you were like just sharing your book was you could tell that it was very much based on being a creator instead of just a consumer. It was like, how is this going to work for you? How is this going to happen? What would you change? And it was just really amazing. It was not a blueprint of do this, do this, do this. It was, here's a lot of great ideas. What do you think about it? How can you change? What is your context going to be for your school? What is your context for your classroom? And how is it going to impact the way that you approach this? And I just was like, oh, I must have this book. So, and the book is Pop-Up Studio. Again, love the title. It is such a beautiful curation of wonderful ideas and just practice. Can you talk us through the journey of how did this happen? Because it was, it's a beautiful creation. I will give you that. It is a beautiful creation of wonderful practice, wonderful engagements of learning. So how did this happen?
Thank you so much for asking that question. So it's happened over a long time. And I think that's something that it's always important to remember when we're looking at something that maybe we're interpreting as being, you know, really beautiful or important or helpful or whatever, that it takes a long time sometimes to get to that point. And the journey of Pop-Up Studio is, it's been a journey over, I could look back and say really my whole career, starting with being in teacher ed. I did a 5-year Bachelor of Education degree at the University of Victoria in Vancouver Island. And my math methods person was a former principal who was doing a math consultancy. And one of his name is Trevor Calkins. He's retired now, but his company Power of 10 is still going. And he had math as a teachable moment. And so I can trace back some of the concepts and principles of Pop-Up Studio to my working with him, or even way beyond or before that and beyond. So I guess really, if I look at like Pop-Up Studio as the title and that sort of concept, it came about, I guess, around 2016. And our curriculum provincial curriculum in British Columbia was under redesign, and they were moving to a concept-based, competency-driven curriculum. So very IB-like. And I had co-led the implementation of IBPYP as a vice principal IB coordinator. In the early-ish 2000s, we were the first public school in Western Canada to become an IB World School. So I had undergone that kind of transformation.
Yeah.
And I also had done, at the same time, I was doing my graduate work, my master's in cross-faculty inquiry. So all of this background, I was interested in Reggio because our kindergarten teacher had studied there. And all of these pieces were all kind of coming together. And I had the opportunity to start getting asked by my colleagues to come and do Pro-D days. And they were saying, can you talk about inquiry, or can you talk about, you know, like help us with the new curriculum? And what I quickly realized was if I actually just talk about these things or share photos, because we all want to know what it looks like, right? Mm-hmm. When we're trying to do something new, I can move the needle with people, but it's not the same as if they can experience it. And my contributing author, Janice Novikowski, I met her in, I can't remember the year now, but it was before 2016. And she actually visited my kindergarten classroom, and she brought all of these materials, these loose parts, these baskets, etc. And math is her area. And she did a little pop-up math studio with us. And it was amazing. The children were learning in such beautiful, natural, stimulating ways. And they were totally showing the curricular competencies that are outlined in this curriculum document. And I just thought, oh my gosh, yes. And it's Reggio inspired, and it's inquiry, and it's hands-on, it's all these things that I just totally love. So that was a huge aha moment for me.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what, I this is what I need to be doing in professional development when I have the opportunity to work with visiting school or teachers, is we need to actually experience it. So I started to create pop-up classrooms, but because they are meant to feel like studio spaces where we can experiment and create and explore, I called them pop-up studios. And what was really interesting was, I mean, I usually, and knock on wood, I hope this continues, but I usually get positive feedback when I'm with a group, because I work really hard to make sure that whatever I do is really respectful and generative with them. And we work together to co-construct whatever it is we're doing. But I started to get a different kind of feedback. It was like, we're so energized and we're doing pop-up studios in our schools and in our classrooms, and the kids are super engaged. It was all about what was going on with the kids. And I thought, this is powerful. And the other big piece of feedback that I got when we were in our studio spaces was, this feels so good. This actually feels therapeutic. And mm-hmm. I thought, I have to study this. What is going on that professional learning can be therapeutic,
yeah,
and feel good, as well as giving us good, you know, new ideas. And so it was actually Amy Burball who said, that's got to be the title of your book, Pop-Up Studio. And it is. So that's how the story came to be. The book came to, or the title of the book came to be. Yeah.
What a beautiful story, Misty. And it's just like, again, what an amazing example of making purposeful learning happen through play, through experimenting, through questioning. And I loved how, like, you know, there's so much stigma and rumors and this idea of what inquiry and play is. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just them out there moving mm-hmm. stuff around. Oh, it's just mm-hmm. them asking a bunch of questions. Oh, it's just, mm-hmm. it's just them with loose parts building something. And I'm like, sure. I mean, that can be one way, but that's not the only way. And it's just, I love when you say, you know, there's purpose. It was passionate. That was powerful. And it was just, and you know, and it goes back to being therapeutic. You know, we've all had professional development days that were not so great. We've all had some that were amazing. And I always think about, what were those professional development days that were so amazing? What was it that connected them? And I can almost always, and I can almost guarantee that all of the ones I've been a part involved me as a learner. It did not was just reading from a screen. It wasn't someone lecturing to 200 people. It was people bringing in lots of stuff and giving us a big question. And we explored it through the day. And then we had to tie all these different things of what it looked like. And I just think Pop-Up Studio is such a beautiful concept and such a beautiful book. And I'm so excited to get to dive into it and read it. I have the Kindle version, which I really do like, but I want the book. I want the physical copy. So I'm so excited.
I spared no expense making this book because it's for teachers, really. I mean, and it could be teachers of all kinds of things. But teachers are very special people. And I really feel that they deserve the best. So it's the best paper. It's full color. It's ethically made. Everyone who worked on the book was paid properly and acknowledged and properly. And I think that it's important if someone's going to hold something in their hands that it's the best it can be. So I'm excited for you to get the hard copy because
my heart just swelled.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Absolutely. And when you were talking on our presentation cohort thing way back when, I love that you're like, I'm not here to make money on this. Like, yes, I think you said you like make a dollar per book and you donate that dollar. Yes. And I was just like, go you. Like what an amazing thing of like, you know what, this is what my learning is. And like, I can't wait for the second edition and the third edition and the next ones. And oh, I'm so excited for it.
Well, thank you. And you do actually have the second edition. So the first edition is like half the size of what's out now. And that was a really great journey for me to put that out and go through. And what I realized from feedback was people wanted more examples. And there was a piece of the book that was, it's still in its infancy. Like it's only a few years old and it will grow and change and evolve as I do, you know, being a lifelong learner. But there's one section that was a little bit confusing for people. And I wanted to work on that. And by working on it, it created so much more content. So now the book has three main distinct sections that all work together. It has guiding principles called the four A's, and those are really my guides on the side. Those are those structures. So you talked about how sometimes inquiry and play, et cetera, can feel really free and open, and what you're seeing doesn't look like rigorous learning in the way that maybe our colonized brains, perspectives, experiences can bring to the table and what learning looks like. And we don't see what's behind the scenes. And so the four A's are really like those behind the scenes pieces, those criteria, those check-ins of like, is this going to be really generative? Is this going to be really rigorous? Is it going to be really authentic? So those start off the book. And then we have the SEAMI design framework, concept, material, experience. SEAMI, because when those elements are at play, we really see the learners. So that's the design framework. And then there's the coaching cycle, which is the POWR coaching cycle, P-O-W-R, prepare, observe, wonder, and respond. And that coaching cycle helps us step into being professional marvelers. That term comes from Loris Belaguchi and early years educators Ann Pala and Maggie Carter write about it. But I haven't seen people talk about it in the K-7 or beyond realm. And when I look at Lee Waters' work or others who are writing about formative assessment, strength-based assessment, I feel like being a professional marveler when I'm working with students that way, regardless of age, magic happens because we're in a peaceful, joyful state. And we're looking at, you know, what Yang Zhao talks about, like the Rudolph effect, like what's making this special, and let's amplify that.
Yeah.
And we have a lot around like how we can respond to kids or prompts that we can ask. And the book is filled with prompts and questions and tons of interactive things. But I don't see a lot of resources yet, or at least that I haven't come across, that really go into our mindset. You know, I know Trevor McKenzie talks about the inquiry mindset, right? So what's the mindset of a professional marveler and how can we actually treat that as a bit of an inquiry cycle? So the book is not here's a 18 activities that are ready made that you can replicate with your learners. This book is really positioning you as the teacher artist that I believe you are, and it's giving you really flexible, responsive frameworks so that you can input in all of these different curations that are meaningful and relevant to you and your learners, and still have that sort of concept-driven inquiry that's playful that many of us are looking for in our schools.
And what a beautiful way of involving people's contextual environments, whether it's culture, whether it's physical, whether it's mental. And when I see is like what you just said, this isn't 18 activities that you can do. And I'm just like, yeah, because I don't know if those 18 activities are going to work for my students in Korea. I don't know if they're going to work for my students in China. I don't know if those students are going to work in South America. But if you, and when you bring up Trevor McKenzie, I love his inquiry mindset series, because inquiry is not a subject. Inquiry is a mindset. And I love that he encapsulates that is, this is an approach to go through anything, to go through any learning. And I just, mm-hmm. I love your book with the prompts, and I'm just.
Well, I think, it's interesting how we talk about mindset and we talked about me being in this PhD program, and right now I'm learning from Dr. Celeste Snowberg, and she writes a lot about embodied inquiry, and that our bodies are studios. They are sites for inquiry, and I love that, right? And so, we are always in places that can be sites for really generative, interesting inquiry. We're living it. Mm-hmm. And so, I think there's no end to possibilities. And my heart always breaks when I'm in places myself or alongside others who, the budgets are really tight. I mean, that's in so many places. Yeah. We can't access the resources that we want to. The physical structure of our classroom may not be what we want. And it's heartbreaking that in so many places, children are really undervalued and teachers are undervalued. And so I'm really wanting to support that the things we want to do in education, those amazing, I'll call them activities, but sometimes we see on Pinterest and we think like, oh, we can't do that. I don't have all the stuff or my learners, whatever. What happens if we can treat wherever we are as a studio, and that we are artists and we have the competencies to work with our learners to pop this up anywhere we are. And so I'm so motivated to be like, you know what? You've got this cup beside you. You can use this cup for all kinds of inquiries, like by just having the questions and being curious and looking through it with different conceptual lenses. And, it's just so exciting. And then all of a sudden we're in an abundant mindset. Yes. And even more than that, Celeste talks about, the body set. It's like, mindful, what about bodyful? And Pop-Up Studio is experiential and it's hands-on, because I really believe our hands are highways for learning.
And
I
have goosebumps. Oh my gosh.
It's always been like that. So it's just traveling back to how we've always learned. We've always learned in circle and through stories and through our hands and through direct experiences and through observing others and trying things out and seeing if they work and having authentic audiences of, who's going to watch as we do something and we step into our roles and mature. And so this is an echoing back and an honoring of how we've always been as learners and as educators. And it's a reminder, but it's filled with recent research in neuroscience as well, because I think scientists are catching up to, these things that that our Indigenous elders have known for forever, right? They're just proving the benefits of meditation or breath or, empathy or whatever those things may be. So it's a weaving of those really important human elements, because we're human beings learning, right?
Oh, my goodness. I have goosebumps everywhere, Misty. That is, it was so, oh my gosh, there were so many little bits in there that was just like the hands are the highways of learning. And I'm like, yes. And it goes back to that age old saying, you know, like, give me a fish, I eat for a day. Teach me to fish, I'll eat for life. Involve me, I'll eat forever. And it's just like, yeah, like, I think that's what we all want to be, is involved in our learning, regardless of age, regardless of concept, regardless of subject. Students, and I include myself in that, is we want to be involved. We want to be agentic. We want to be own it. We want to empower ourselves to continue that learning. And what a beautiful way of showing that learning can pop up anywhere. And it doesn't need to happen in the most beautiful Instagram worthy classroom. It can happen out on the playground. It can happen out on the parking lot. It can happen out in the cafeteria. You know, one of the most beautiful activities I've ever seen was by my buddy Ben, and he did it in the cafeteria. And it was all about the waste of food that happened in our cafeterias and what we can do to be a little bit more mindful about how much food we take versus how much food we need to throw away. Like, yes, we can always go back for more. Luckily we live in that area, but we don't need to take so much that we throw away. And it didn't happen in a classroom. It happened in the cafeteria. In that pop-up learning.
Well, exactly. And I was just going to say, like, that's a perfect example of pop-up studio at play, you know, depending on how how it's framed and everything. But that concept of waste or food wastage, that is a concept. And so we need to be inquiring into, well, what is that? And what does it look like? And how does it work? And from all of these different perspectives. And that's a really robust, very organic inquiry. And to me, inquiry isn't inquiry for the person if it's not authentic.
Agreed.
Says Judith Lynn Forrest. Right.
Agreed.
And so, you know, I think it's finding these ways through our minds, through our bodies, through our hearts, through our hands, to really be that those agents of change and through that notion of being in the world. And I think, you know, with pop-up studio, sometimes, again, going back to social media that we were talking about before, and my butt train and my no train that I was talking about, it's like, you know, there's so many people sharing so many amazing ideas and projects. And I, you know, we talked about before, being really busy teachers, sometimes we just want to grab those ready-made things. And not to say that that's bad. There's definitely a place for that. And I really admire people who are creating really beautiful, powerful resources like that. I really see myself in the camp that you were talking about before, of like the empowering with frameworks, so that you yourself can create with your students. And the exciting thing too, is that these frameworks are so simple, that they work in any kind of context, and students understand them as young as, you know, I've worked with grade twos creating their own pop-up studios for stakeholders in their school
community. Oh, for sure.
And it's super powerful. And they're all over it. And what's exciting too, is that when we have them do that work, say at the end of the unit as a summative, it's not over. They're inviting learners to co-construct with them in what they have found significant through their hands. So it has to be hands-on. It has to be interactive and participatory. That's the main criteria of this work and concepts there. And that they're researchers. They're collecting data from people who are coming and working with them. And then they're coming back and sharing out those findings. So we're not done. We're never arriving at an understanding that we might write on our planner, whether that's a central idea or various statements of understanding. One of my guiding principles, one of my four A's, is anew, coming from Hannah Arendt's work around natality. She says, it's natality, it's the newness that keeps our world going and refreshes our world, because our world, as a human-made world, is always in a state of ruin. It's always getting old. So we have to renew. It's the same with our ideas. If we don't renovate our ideas continuously, we're in trouble, I think. So
I
think it's really exciting to have students be pop-up studio creators as well.
And again, what an amazing way of bringing ownership, voice, and choice, you know, that IB term of agency into it full tilt at full speed ahead. And I just, and when you go back, you know, to like the unit ending, you mentioned that very briefly. It really hit me when we were taking down a unit of inquiry and the student mm-hmm. said, "So are we done learning?" And I was like, "Oh, I have goosebumps again." So that, and that happened a long time ago. And I was like, okay. I got to be a little bit more mindful about when we say the unit is ending, about that our learning is never stopping because of that anewness. You know, we're constantly reflecting. We're constantly coming back. And it just because we have to move on doesn't mean we have to stop that learning that was so powerful and those inquiries
totally.
And questions.
Yeah, totally. And I think I'm thinking about Ron Rickards. I always say his last name wrong. Ron Richard. Yeah. And I got a chance to hear him in person when I was visiting Harvard at Project Zero Classroom in 2018. I was like,
I'm so jealous.
Experience. Oh, I felt so lucky to have done that. And you know, he talks about the eight cultural forces that are at yep. play anytime, but how we might be able to really recognize those cultural forces. And be able to design very intentionally with them in mind. And I think language, you know, they're all super important, but just when you talked about the unit ending, I mean, I'm constantly in awe and impressed by the power of language. And so the unit ending versus like one of the things I used to do sometimes is I'd even have a globe and I'd say, okay, so we're, or I'd have students stand up and I said, okay, so we're turning away from this to tune into this. Doesn't mean that we're not going to pay attention to it ever. It's not there ever.
So clever.
But we're just tuning into this because we're going to give it a lot of attention over the next little while. And so just
I'm stealing that
moving, right? Our bodies of like we're looking at a different direction or from a different angle with something can be really helpful for students. But also just making it explicit. Like we're not learning anymore about this.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're doing a deep dive or whatever.
Yep. Yep. Oh, Misty, I'm so stealing that. I am so stealing that. Thank you so much for sharing that little tidbit. Misty, I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, but I know it's recess duty, so we try to keep things short here. So Misty, yes. Please tell us where people can find you to connect with you. All of the links will be in the show notes. So please, listeners, go connect with this amazing individual, Misty Patterson.
Thank you so much. So my website is at popupstudioed.com, and that's the hub of everything. You can see that my Instagram there. I'm on Twitter at Patterson Misty. You'll be able to, on the website, download freebies. Like I've got a mini guide with three question stems that I love. Two activities that you can do with anything and a materials inspiration page. You can read the first chapter of my book from my website. You can book a 30-minute call with me. So that's really the very first place people should go. You can buy the book directly from the website as well. It links to Kindle and also the hard copy. It's free shipping within North America. And if you are beyond North America, it's available through Follett. They can do a better job with the shipping than I can. And but everything can happen at popupstudioed.com. So I encourage people to just head there and have fun. And please get in touch with me. You can email me directly from there as well. And I really do love to hear from people because you're my friends and you're in my community. I'm in your community. And how can we be better together if we're not chatting? So I really don't want anyone to be like, oh, she's busy or whatever. Like, we're all busy. Let's connect.
Agreed, 100%. Misty, we ask all guests here on the Recess Duty, what is it you remember about recess growing up?
Oh, great question. I'm laughing because one of my memories that just came up was, I think it's grade 3, and watching somebody eat a crane fly on a dare. So remembering about recess, you know, just taking that in. One of my memories of elementary school recess for sure is it's the dares. It's the risk taking. It's the things that you do that you might not do in the classroom. It's the pressing the boundaries, right? And it's having fun. And so I'd like to leave it like that. What I remember is, you know, pressing the boundaries and having fun.
That's awesome. No, I remember a lot of dares in elementary school. Thank you, Misty, for coming to this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our next episode. I'm Levi Allison, and I hope you have a great day of learning, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our recess duty.